You're listening to Lindy's Audio Cafe, a positive and lighthearted podcast. Life gets busy, and in the race for happiness, we sometimes forget what is truly important. In the end, it's often the smaller things in life that truly matter. Stick around. There's always something new to talk about, and we're glad to have you join us. Thanks for listening, and here's your host, Lindy.
Well, hello there, and welcome to Lindy's Audio Cafe. My name is Lindy, and I'm absolutely delighted to join you once again today. Well, today is a really exciting day for me. I am being joined online via Zoom today with a really wonderful lady. Now, Dr. Trina Dora is a physician. She's a certified life coach, and she's just human, just like the rest of us. She was a former binge eater. And she's also got her very own podcast, and it's called Diet Culture is BS. And I love that name. Diet Culture is BS. I don't like dieting. Anyway, I would like to welcome Dr. Trina Dora. Hello there.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on the show. This is so exciting for me that we've been able to connect here.
Yes, no, I am very excited to share my story and help your listeners. Hopefully somebody hears something in my story and encourages them to get the help they need.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And we are quite a few kilometers apart. And it's amazing. I mean, we're over probably about 3,500 kilometers plus apart in distance. You're in Texas. I'm here on Vancouver Island. But it doesn't matter where you live. We all have the same issues when it comes to diet and weight management.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting because growing up in the U.S., it's easy to think that this is the only country that puts emphasis on weight and appearance, but that's not true. There are so many people in so many countries around the world who are getting these same messages, telling them from the time pretty much we're born, like it starts at a very young age, that there's one body type that is the body type we should all be striving for and that we should do whatever it takes to look like that.
I agree. And I think it isn't something that's just started happening. I think it's been happening for a long time. I've been around the sun a few times. I'm, I'm going on to being in my late 50s pretty soon here. And I remember from the time that I was little, even seeing the magazines, there was always this image of how you should look, especially as a woman. You need to have slim hips. You need to be curvy. You need to be this. You need to be that. And it just seemed like there was a lot of pressure out there.
Yeah, definitely in print. Now, social media, that's the big thing where you see all of these influencers and people posting pictures of their bodies or talking about weight loss. You'll see videos where people are promoting disordered eating. There's commercials everywhere talking about weight loss. And so you really cannot escape it.
Yeah, there is a lot of that out there. Now, for yourself, I understand that you did have to overcome a bit of a personal struggle at one time with binge eating. Are you able to tell us a little bit about that and what happened?
Yes, it really got bad during the pandemic. So I'm a physician and the pandemic started and I'm the type of physician who works in the hospital. So even though a lot of other people were at home at the time, we were having to go into the hospital still. So it was a very scary time. I know it's kind of hard to remember it now because it doesn't seem as scary now. But back then, there were no vaccines. This was something completely new. Everybody was staying home, yet we were going into the hospital. We thought we might die. And it was just a lot of stress, plus the stress of kids being out of school and being at home. And the only way that I really knew how to deal with stress was by eating. I knew that whenever I ate, I felt better. And so then that becomes the thing that you do over and over again, because that is what you are so used to doing. Like it just kind of becomes your default way of dealing with things.
And did you find it was soothing at that time? Was that a way to kind of self-soothe when you were under that much stress?
Yes. But so what I always tell people is whenever you are eating for comfort, it does help initially. Like while you're eating, you'll notice that that stress is starting to decrease, but the actual original problem isn't going anywhere. So then you eat and then the guilt and the shame come in and you still have the same problem or the same stress or the same issue that you had before you turned to food. And so, yes, in the moment, it feels good. And I think our brains remember that. And our brain offers that as a solution to us the next time we're feeling bad. Oh, remember, food makes you feel good, go eat, but it doesn't actually solve the problem in the long run. And I think that's what we have to remember. But at that time, we're just trying to do the best we can. We are doing the best we can with what we know to do. And so many people, what they know is turning to food.
Yeah, and that's hard. And I mean, and depending on what you're eating, if you have healthy choices, it probably isn't the end of the world. But I think traditionally what happens is when we're doing that, we don't always reach for the piece of fruit or the carrot stick or the celery, that type of thing.
Yeah, no, and I think that what happens is we restrict certain foods. And so restriction is a huge part of binge eating. And so by restriction, it's those very strict limits that we place on what we're allowed to eat, when we can eat, how much we can eat. And so we put food in good and bad categories. So when you're talking about celery or fruit or broccoli, those foods aren't the ones that we put in the bad category. Usually those are in the good category. So whenever we are stressed, that's not what we're reaching for. We are reaching for those foods that we have restricted, the foods that we don't allow ourselves to have on a normal basis. That's what we reach for because that's what feels good and brings the comfort.
I totally get that. And even myself, I'm a snacker. I'm a nighttime snacker. And it's a habit I'm trying to curtail. And I have a soft spot for junk food cereals. I think I sent you a picture of one of my favorite ones. And I confess, it's almost a nightly thing for me. Either it's a bowl of chips or it's a bowl of my junk food cereal. And I look at it and I go, well, I know I need to quit that junk food cereal because I am putting so much sugar in my system every day and I don't really think about it. And sugar is also so addictive. It really is.
Right. And it's probably at this point a habit. Something happens and it kind of triggers you or it's a cue. Yeah. And then now you're in the habit of responding by eating because eating feels good. And so part of the work, whenever you help people overcome binge eating or overeating, is figuring out other ways to respond to those cues. So we can't get rid of the stress. We can't always get rid of anxiety, sadness, unhappiness, all of the different emotions that lead us to want to eat, but we want to become more mindful of it. And then whenever we have that cue, learn other ways to manage it, other ways to manage our stress or our fear, anxiety, depression, whatever it is. That's what we want to do so we can break that habit. Whereas right now the habit is responding by eating. We want to figure out what else can we do other than eat. And that will actually take care of the problem more. So if we are upset because we just got in a fight with our partner, for example, then that's what we need to address, not go and eat a bag of chips.
Yeah, that's a very valid point. And I suppose that probably does happen a lot with binge eating, you know, where people are basically self-soothing. And I think, did you refer to it as being emotional eating in one of your podcasts?
Yes, I use different terms because I think different terms resonate with people differently. So you'll hear me talk about overeating, emotional eating, binge eating, compulsive overeating. I use different terms just because I never know how someone thinks about it. But in general, I'm talking about whenever we're labeling food, putting it in categories, saying certain foods are good and bad, where we put very strict limits on food. We put a lot of strict rules around eating food. And then we also have this mental dialogue or this mental chatter where we are fighting with ourselves all day long. You can eat this. No, you can't eat this. Oh, remember how many calories this has. No, you shouldn't. And it's just consuming our minds. And then whenever something happens, we respond by eating. Kind of any of that type of behavior is the type of behavior that I help people with, regardless of what they call it themselves.
Wow, that's a whole way of looking at it. And I never really analyzed it that much, you know, but when you think about it, yes, you're seeing a whole other side of it. And probably that comes from having personal experience and being a physician as well. So you understand the medical aspects of what can happen as well, too.
Well, so interestingly, in medicine, or in our medical training, or at least the medical training I went through, yes, you do learn the definitions of anorexia, binge eating disorder, bulimia, but that's about it because the medical specialty that really deals with the eating disorders is psychiatry. So in medical school, you learn a little bit, but unless you're a psychiatrist, you really don't learn that much. We don't do a very good job necessarily of recognizing it in our patients all the time, or even in ourselves. I have had a lot of physicians reach out to me since I've become more open sharing my story, and they'll say, what you're saying resonates with me. I think I may have a problem. And they're physicians, but they didn't really realize it until they heard somebody else talking about it. Because it's so easy to think that a lot of the disordered behaviors we engage in, the disordered eating we engage in, is normal because so many people around you may be doing the same thing. So you might not even realize what you're doing is a sign of disordered eating.
That's interesting. And it also brings to light that people that work in the medical industry are humans. We're real humans, and real humans have feelings, real humans have lives, real humans have stresses, and real humans have different ways of dealing with those things.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you do help a lot of physicians as well.
Yes, yes. So my passion is in helping physicians because I am a physician. So I know the unique stressors, but I will help anyone. I have a goal for 2023, which is the year we're recording this podcast, of helping 200 people improve their relationship with food. So I am open to helping anyone just because I believe that this message needs to be heard. I believe the things that I learned in treatment are applicable to a wide variety of people. And that's kind of where my motivation is coming from. Not that I think everyone out there has an eating disorder or officially has binge eating disorder, but I think that a lot of people are maybe on the spectrum, or some of their behaviors are getting them closer to disordered eating. And so I want to teach them what I learned because they may never have heard it before. They may never have heard the concept of the more restrictive you are, the more likely you are to binge. People think, oh, I just need to find the right diet, or I just need more willpower, or I just need to try again tomorrow. But the underlying issue is, as long as you keep depriving yourself, then you're going to keep wanting those foods. The cravings are going to keep growing. You're going to give in. You're going to have these episodes where you just eat everything. Then you're going to feel shame. You're going to try to fix it with a diet. And that cycle is going to continue over and over and over again.
And I think I've heard of that. Isn't that what kind of like what they call yo-yo dieting, where people, I used to hear that term yo-yo dieting,
yes,
you know, where people would, you know, be bouncing back and forth all the time, you know,
right.
And that's hard because I know even myself, I've sometimes said, am I a binge eater? I mean, I don't know what a binge eater is specifically. And I mean, if I sit down and I eat a bowl of chips and I go back and go, man, that tasted so good, I need another bowl. And yes, I do that from time to time. And then by about the time I'm hitting the third time, I'm going, okay, now I'm binging. Now I need to stop. Now is it. I got to call it quits. But if you're really binge eating, is it hard to find that line? Like for myself, I have digestive issues. So I'm forced to have to stop at a certain point, or I will pay for it the next day. I can't physically do it. But for some people, it's like they get started. It's like, well, that just tastes so good. I've started that bag of chips. What the heck? I'm halfway through. Get rid of the next one. And like you say, right, I'll start the diet tomorrow. But now, like you say, the damage is done. You've eaten that whole bag of chips and now you're feeling ashamed. And chances are you're looking in the mirror, looking at your stomach sideways in the mirror going, why did I eat that bag of chips?
Yes, exactly. And so there are official criteria for binge eating disorder. I won't go into that since I am not a psychiatrist. But what I would say is, if you think you may have binge eating disorder or any eating disorder, there are organizations out there like the National Eating Disorders Association. They have a screening quiz on there that could be a place to start. But there's a much larger percent of the population who would never officially meet criteria, but they still do what you talked about. They're not hungry and they're still grabbing the second or the third bag of chips. And so then it kind of becomes, well, why are we doing that? What is driving this behavior? And then if it only is happening every so often, we always say that when we think about normal eating does also involve overeating at times. There is no perfection in eating. I always tell people there's no perfection in eating. Normal eating involves everything. But it becomes a problem if it feels like you're out of control, or you just can't stop, or maybe food is dominating your thoughts. You feel obsessed or addicted to it. That's whenever it becomes a problem. You know that you're not hungry. Maybe even you're feeling physically full and you're still eating, even though it's making you feel sick. Then that's when you kind of start thinking, okay, this is more than just eating a couple of extra chips. Like maybe there is something going on. Maybe it's that you're not eating enough during the day and your body is just doing what it's designed to do to try to make up for the calorie deficit. Maybe you don't really have a binging problem. Maybe you're just not eating enough. Or maybe there are, maybe you are trying to deal with your emotions in a way that isn't the best way to deal with it. And so maybe you need some new coping strategies or some new techniques. I do also think a lot of it is learning to love yourself and have compassion for yourself, how you are now, because we talked at the very beginning about how there's this ideal put forward of the ideal body. Everyone needs to look like this. And as long as you are still holding on to that dream or that idea that you are going to look like that, you're going to keep putting your body through these damaging diets over and over and over again. But part of recovery is letting go of that idea and learning how we can reach maybe not self-love or body positivity. It may just be body acceptance or body neutrality, just something where you aren't trying to hate yourself thin. You aren't going on diet after diet because of how much you hate yourself. So a lot of the work is in changing your relationship with yourself and your body, deconstructing these messages that we've all been told our entire lives, so that then we're not responding by trying to get this unrealistic ideal.
Absolutely. And do you think that sometimes who you hang out with, who you're around, can have an impact on people? Like, I know, not that I'd go in too much into personal stuff, but I know when I was younger, I had somebody say a really crappy thing about my physical appearance once, and it stood with me for a long time. And to this day, I still will once in a while catch myself looking in the mirror and going, I got really wide hips. And it was a comment somebody made about my hips, and it was really hurtful. And I know for years I was like, I don't want to gain too much weight because somebody told me once that I had really big hips. And it just sticks with you when people say those things. And I think learning to not take it personally and remember that they're the one that had poor manners has nothing to do with how I look.
Right. And that person is also in diet culture as well. So their thoughts have also been framed by this unrealistic ideal. There are very few people that look like the ideal naturally. And you are correct. These messages start when we're young. People do often say hurtful things when we're young, and it does end up sticking with us. And yes, that is absolutely true. As an adult, we do have a lot more control over who we are exposing ourselves to, who we're hanging out with, and the messages we're receiving. So our physical, our in life or in real life circle of friends, We have control over that. You can set boundaries with those people. You can tell them you don't want to talk about weight. You don't want to talk about diets. You can remove yourself from the situation, maybe not spend as much time with them if they don't honor your boundaries. And then another thing that's really helpful, if you're on social media a lot, is curating your social media feed to be more body positive, body accepting. And so getting rid of people talking about diets or the people who say, this is what I ate in a day. And then there's a lot of these videos where people are glorifying very thin body frames or glorifying eating very few calories in a day. But you can get rid of those. And then you can add people, or you can start following people that have much healthier perspectives of their body and food and weight.
I think that's really a good idea because you are right. It just seemed like even this year, as soon as we were done Christmas, we were blasted across social media. Everything. Okay, now you've gone through that Christmas holiday binge. Here we go. Time to diet. Get on this program. Take this supplement. Do this, do that. Oh, and for X amount of dollars a month, we can help you lose 20 pounds in 1 month. And at the end of it,
Go into, there are settings you can go into in your social media. You can give feedback on the ads that you see to try to decrease the number of ads. But I've also noticed it's on TV a lot, like in commercials. So in my house, we watch a lot of streaming television because streaming television doesn't have commercials. And that's helpful because then I don't have to see diet commercials and neither do my kids.
I think that's huge. And especially when you're talking about kids. And I mean, even how we address weight and weight management definitely reflects on our children as well, too. And I remember one time, I think I had gone on a diet and I've raised a daughter and a son. And I remember one time somebody reminding me saying, you shouldn't talk about your diet so much around your daughter because you don't want your daughter to develop an eating disorder. And I had to catch myself and go, yep, time to stop talking about it. I need to not talk about this anymore and just focus on the healthy stuff. Are you getting your vegetables? Are you getting your fruit? You know, that type of thing. And I think focusing on the healthy foods versus, you know, what's going to make you be thin, because after all, our bodies are a pretty busy machine and you need to have the right foods to be able to run smoothly. And I think focusing more on that what you need to be able to function versus what you need to be able to look a certain way.
Yes. No, I think that's so important. There are so many ways that we unintentionally are harming children by the messages that we give them. So one thing I always tell people is a lot of us grew up being told to clean our plates. And so you're at dinner and your family says, well, you can't get up until you eat everything on the plate. Or they tell you some version of, you know, there's starving children somewhere, you need to eat everything on your plate. And so even though you're not even hungry anymore, now you're eating, or you're eating because they told you you have to eat everything before you can get dessert. So that's an easy habit that we can break with our children. So whenever my kids tell me that they are full, I tell them, okay, you don't have to eat everything. Now, I will sometimes say, yes, you can have some dessert, but you do also need to eat some food because our bodies aren't designed to only live off of sugar or only live off of carbs, or our bodies are designed to, they work best when we're eating a balanced meal. So I try to use the word balanced. I don't use healthy so much in front of my kids because even the terms healthy and unhealthy or the pursuit of health can turn into an eating disorder. Like there is an actual eating disorder where people are so focused and obsessed with trying to be healthy and eat healthy that it turns into an eating disorder. So I try to talk to my kids about balance. I tell them that all food is available. No foods are bad foods. Yes, different foods do different things in our bodies. And we may not eat equal amounts of every food all the time based on what it is, but that if there's something that they do really want, they are allowed to have it. So I try not to demonize food. I also try not to offer food as a reward, which is hard because we're so used to doing that. Or your child is crying and you say, oh, well, here's a cookie or here's a popsicle. And I want to do the same thing. So I have to catch myself sometimes not tying rewards in food. Like I don't want them to make a connection of every time I'm celebrating something or every time I'm sad, I eat.
And that's a really good point. And that actually brings me to a discussion that I was having at home this morning. We were talking about food and celebrations. And it seems so often when you're having a celebration, you're having a birthday or you're, you know, somebody's had a, you know, getting married or whatever it is, any kind of celebration, anniversary, Christmas, it's always tied around food. And, you know, I often think to myself, it'd be so nice to be able to just get together with friends and say, let's go for a walk, guys. Let's go do something, or let's go sightseeing. Let's go to a museum. Let's go do something, but not just let's go for lunch. Let's go for dinner. Everybody come for dinner, because it seems it's always a food focus.
Right. And you certainly could do those things. I think a lot of us are just conditioned to when you get together, food is involved, because obviously food's a very important part of our society, but you certainly could do some other things and really focus on the connections with other people that you're making. Some of that could even fill the voids that you're trying to fill with food, making connections with people and, you know, creating, you know, new loving, authentic relationships.
So I think where you live can play a very important role in it as well, too, because I've never lived in a big city. I'm a smaller town type girl, and I've always lived in areas where I could be out fishing 10 minutes from my house. I've got nature trails out back. I have lots of areas where I can get out and get fresh air, but not everybody has that luxury. And I think if you live in an area where it's not so easy to get out and do that stuff, probably it's harder to find things to do that don't involve food.
I definitely think that that is true. Thankfully, there are some options now, but even some of the options that are out there, you do have to have money for them. Yeah. So you can always buy a bike and have a bike at home, but you have to be able to afford the bike and afford the subscription. And so I think you do raise a point that it's very easy to talk about health and nutrition and wellness and eating healthy food and organic and, you know, baking and all of that. But that works really well when you have financial privilege. It doesn't work as well whenever you don't. And so I think that, yes, we can always offer recommendations, but people are doing the best that they can do. I think it's good to give people knowledge and they can make whatever changes they can, and also acknowledge that it may be easier for some people to put our advice into play than other people. Even if I say, yeah, well, go see a therapist, maybe there's some things that you need to work through that are also contributing to you overeating. Well, it's much easier to see a therapist if you either have insurance or if you can pay cash. And so, again, yes, we give the recommendations and we also acknowledge that they're not as easy for everyone to implement.
I agree. And I think you touched on a very important part. And even eating healthy can be really expensive. And I mean, I'm not sure what you're paying for groceries where you're at, but we've seen a huge increase in the cost of groceries here. I was in a store one day and I think they wanted, it was like $8 for a head of lettuce. And I'm like, that's just ridiculous. I'm not paying $8 for a head of lettuce. It was just too much. And I know myself, I try to grow some of my own vegetables in the summer. I'm not that great a gardener, though. I'd still rather buy them from the farm. I had some pretty sad looking carrots. But, you know, I do try to do some of that stuff. But it is very expensive to eat healthy. And I think about, you know, single parents, people who are on limited income, seniors, pensioners, anybody that's struggling just to be able to meet the rent. Sometimes you don't have a lot of choice and you can't always go to the fresh food aisle. Sometimes you're having to go to the foods that are more affordable that you can buy in bulk, the noodles, the pastas, that sort of thing. And that can be challenging.
Right. And again, I try to tell people no food is bad food. Like that is one of my mantras. And yeah, one of the things that I learned whenever I was in treatment that really helped in terms of that eating disorder or that disordered eating mindset. Because again, when we start labeling food as bad, that's whenever we get into that mindset of the food is bad. I shouldn't be eating it. I guess I should be restricting or trying to avoid it. I'm bad for eating it. Then the guilt and the shame. And so I do try to stay away from labeling food as good and bad. And then just trying to get it in where you can. If you can't afford more expensive fruits, there's cheaper fruit that you could try, or maybe going to a farmer's market to get the food. So other ways to try and fit that in.
Absolutely. So yeah, you'd mentioned that you had overcome a binge eating disorder, and I would love to know what some of the tools were that you managed to adopt to be able to help not be binge eating anymore.
Right. I think that the number one thing that I tell people is this idea of restriction. And I know I've said it multiple times, but again, it's the idea of putting limits on food. So I had to get over limiting food. And so that's limiting the quantity of the food or when I could eat the food or limiting the type of food that I could eat. All of those led to restriction. And so I had to get in my mind that it was okay to have macaroni and cheese, or it was okay to have pizza. And it didn't happen overnight, certainly. It took a process. And while I was going through that process, I was also getting help. I sought out a dedicated eating disorders treatment team that was helping me. I also, and that treatment team consists of a psychiatrist who specializes in eating disorders, a therapist who specializes in eating disorders, and a dietitian who specialized in eating disorders. And then at the same time, I am a life coach. So obviously I believe in life coaching. And so I continued to work with a life coach even while I was going through treatment, because there are things that come up in my day-to-day life that were causing me to want to eat because that was the way I coped with it. But it wasn't necessarily something I would take to a therapist. My coworker said something that upset me. That really wasn't what my therapist wanted to spend her time talking about. And so those were the things I would take to my coach. And I would take my ambitions and my goals and all the frustrations in my day-to-day life. But the reason that was still helpful having the coach is because those things also led me to binge eat, because I would deal with everything essentially in my life through eating. And so going through the treatment program with the people who are specialized, and then letting go of the restriction, doing challenges where I had to eat pizza with my family, or I would go and get the macaroni and cheese. Letting go of the scale really helped me to recover. And so at first I was encouraged to, well, when I was in treatment, we weren't allowed to weigh ourselves. And so if we weighed at treatment just so that the physician could know our weight, we did what's called blind weights. And so we would actually turn around so we couldn't see the number on the scale. And that's actually something I still do even to this day when I go to the doctor's office. I'll get on the scale, but I turn around so that I don't see the number, so that there's no way that I would be triggered by that number. But at home, I did end up getting rid of my scale, and not stepping on the scale really helped. And then the thoughts that no food's bad and all food fits, meaning I'm allowed to have anything I want. If I truly want it, I'm allowed to have it. I don't have to put any kind of restriction on it. And then I can enjoy it and I can listen to my body and stop whenever I'm full. So that goes into the principles of intuitive eating. That's been a game changer for me as well. And one thing that I love teaching other people, teaching my clients about intuitive eating, because what intuitive eating says is you have the knowledge within you. We start out as intuitive eaters when we're babies. Nobody tells us when it's time to eat. We just know, and we know when we're full. We lose that along the way. And then intuitive eating is about regaining that intuition. So all food's available to me now. I just say, okay, am I actually hungry? A lot of it's checking in with my body, the mindfulness as I'm eating. Am I full? How full am I? Do I really need any more bites? Should I save this till later? And so it's a process for sure. And then I talked earlier about the journey of self-love, and I'm definitely not at self-love at this point, but I started out at self-hatred. Like when I looked at my body, I hated it. And so now I'm at the point of maybe more acceptance or neutrality, where I can just kind of think, yeah, it, you know, it's my body. My arms help me to carry my kids, or these legs help me to walk and do the things that I want to do, or help me show up for a podcast like this. I was able to climb the stairs and come to, you know, record a podcast like this. That's more like what body neutrality is. And just letting go of this ideal that I'm ever going to look like a supermodel. That's not going to happen. But not even just that, I've had to let go of the ideal that I'm ever going to look like my former self again. Because my former self, when I was at my lowest weight, I was also the deepest I ever was into an eating disorder. Different eating disorder than binge eating, but the deepest I ever was. And so I've had to let go of that as well and be okay with this version of myself and accept that maybe there's a reason that I'm here like this now.
And I think that's really a good way of looking at it. And self-acceptance is such a huge thing. And I go back to sometimes who you are around can play a little bit of a role in it. But if you're around somebody who's negative, who's not promoting that self-acceptance, I think you got to push them aside, because right. You have to be able to do what's going to be good for you. And it's funny because, say, I've met you for the first time today, and as soon as I see you on the screen, I go, wow, what a beautiful lady. You have the best smile.
Thank
you're
you.
Absolutely beautiful. And as soon as you're on the screen, I just think she's so vibrant. And I wouldn't think about weight, size, or whatever. All I see when I see is that great, big, beautiful smile, and you've got eyes that shine, and I see a warm heart. Like, that's what I see. As soon as I see you, I think, oh, wow, I really feel comfortable talking to this lady. What a great person. But it's true. That was my first impression. I thought, wow, right. I'm so glad she's coming on the show. I can really tell this is somebody I can connect with. And it's funny how we are sometimes hard on ourselves. And it's like me going back to the person that made the smart ass remark about the size of my hips a long, long time ago. And I spent a whole lifetime worrying about whether my hips were too big or not. Who cares? At this point, I'll be 57 this summer. And I'm like, I don't really care anymore. If my butt gets a little bit bigger, whatever. It's like, I'm at that age. And I just want people to care for me for who I am, not for the size of my butt or the size of my shoulders. But it took me a long time to get to that point. When I was younger, I was probably borderline on the cusp of being an exercise bulimic. Mm-hmm. And I was probably about 20 pounds lower than I am today. And it was not a healthy weight. And I 100% credit my family doctor who helped see what was going on. And he steered me in the right direction and helped me to stop before it got to a dangerous level. But self-acceptance is so huge. And I think, you know, you brought to light so many things that sometimes it's not just about the diet. It's about how we feel about ourselves and learning to love ourselves for who we are, what's on the inside.
And I think one other thing that helps with that is when you think about whatever your ideal weight is. So let's say that I were to ask 10 people, what weight do you wish you could be? Assuming that they wish that they could be a lower weight. Well, then if you ask them, okay, well, when you were that weight, were you happy? And when you actually stop and think about it, most of us probably wanted to be a lower weight whenever we were that weight that we now think is the ideal. And so we just spend so much time wanting to be somebody different and consuming, like our minds are consumed with thoughts of food and trying to lose weight. And then all of the chatter that goes on in our minds. And it does make you think like, well, if I let go of this, what could I actually accomplish in my life?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I know even on the whole side of just being able to accept this is where I'm at. And I know for me, as I'm in the menopausal years and I'm getting older, I've always been huge on exercise. It's been my way of life. It's been my way of coping with stress. Anytime I've gone through, you know, dealing with death or traumatic events, anything, exercise has always, always, always been my go-to. But that can bring challenges too, because what happens when the day comes and your body isn't doing what you want to do anymore? And I experience a bit of that now. I'm having issues and can't exercise the same way that I used to. I still exercise, but I'm a bit more limited. And I recognize that as that happens and I age and some things are changing, my shape is going to change again because I can't do that amount of exercise. And if I don't love myself for who I am, and that body shape starts changing, that's a really tough journey. And so it's so important to just love yourself for who you are. And I go back again to when I look at you and I love that smile. Like, I just think anybody who's your patient is so lucky to be able to have you for a doctor. I'm serious because, you know, it's a huge thing, especially when you're dealing with somebody who's going to help you medically. It really is a huge thing to be able to feel comfortable and to not feel shame. And, you know, it was interesting because when I had a podcast with a lady who was a diabetes educator over in the UK, and she joked around and she said, you know, she was, what did she say in the podcast? She said, I tell people that I'm a nurse and not a priest. I don't want their confessions. She said that in the podcast. It was really cute. But what she was saying was that, you know, I'm not here to judge you. Right. And I think that's so huge that, you know, when people go in and they are seeking out help, they don't feel judged along the way or that somebody's looking down at them like, why couldn't you control it? You know, they should be able to talk freely. Yeah.
Especially when it comes to binge eating, I think there's so much shame or overeating when you feel like you just can't control yourself. There is so much shame. And it is important to work with someone who gets it and isn't going to judge you, because I understand, because I lived in that shame for a long time. But I always tell people it's so worth it to move forward anyway, even though you're feeling shame, because then once you get to the other side, it feels so much better. And so that's not to say that I'm perfect by any means, but my quality of life has gone up so much by not being dominated anymore by food thoughts and food chatter, what we call the food police, like these voices in our mind, always judging us for everything that we're doing, everything we're eating. And I just feel so much happier not hating myself every single day. And so, yes, I had to get over the shame to get here and be willing to push through the shame, but it's so worth it on the other side. And so that's what I want to encourage people to do.
I love it. And one last topic here. I know you talked about the food police and I've seen it with people where they say, oh, really? Well, do you really need to be eating that thing? Or, yes. You know, do you think you should be having that last cookie or, you're eating again? And right. I consider that the food police, and that can be damaging, can't it? If you're around people that are monitoring your food intake on your behalf.
Yes. So whenever I think about the food police, I think about there's the internal food police, the things you're telling yourself, but there's also external food police, like what you said, because again, we all grow up in diet culture. And so you are going to run into people who are judgmental and offering you their opinions on your body and what you're eating, opinions that you never even asked for. Mm-hmm. And so you can decide how you want to handle it. Like you can just walk away if you want to. You can be very direct and shut them down and tell them your body's not up for discussion. However you decide. I know some people might tell a joke or whatever feels right to you, but it's not their right to tell you what to be eating. No matter what your weight is, you deserve to be able to nourish your body, right? And no matter what you look like, you deserve to be able to eat. And so
exactly.
Other people should not be able to tell us. Now, we can't control other people, and so other people are going to continue to offer their opinions. We cannot always control it. And so what you do is you set that boundary of, okay, well, if I can tell them in advance, or I can tell them this isn't a conversation I want to have, but then if they continue to cross the boundary, this is what I'm going to do. And maybe it's removing yourself from the situation or removing yourself from the friendship or just refusing to talk about any of that with those particular people. Because I definitely think it's easier for us to control ourselves and how we're going to respond than trying to control every single other person out there and get all of them to stop making comments.
I agree. And I like the way you say it, of setting your boundaries and just saying to somebody that, yeah, this is not something that I want to talk about. And
I've known people who said, even before they go home, say they're going to go home for Thanksgiving or Christmas or some other holiday, and they have gained weight, for example, since they last saw their family, they know their family's going to say something. And they have even written a letter in advance or an email and said, this is not up for discussion. Now, do all the family members observe that? They might or might not, but it at least gives that person the power, right? Like they are in the driver's seat saying, this is what I'm expecting. And then you can choose how you're going to respond if people don't respect you.
Yeah. I look at that and I think, gee, I've never heard of anyone having to do that. And I go, how sad it is that you actually have to do that. Because I mean, if your hair goes gray or you go bald or whatever happens to change your physical appearance, you shouldn't have to write ahead and say, oh, excuse me, but I look different now.
Right.
It's just me, you know, and you shouldn't even have to do that. People shouldn't comment on appearance at all.
I think just people in our society, they just feel that either they're being helpful or they're saving you, or it's just their right. It's very interesting. It's one of those things that our society still accepts, saying negative things about people based on their weight. And so it is a reality. And then we also have the ability, like you've been saying, to choose who we're surrounding ourselves with and what we are going to allow.
Absolutely. Oh, you brought so many good topics to light today. And I wish I could have you on the show every day. I really do. And I think it's been so enlightening and so motivating. And I love the way that you look at life. And I just think it's absolutely beautiful. It's very refreshing. And I hope that some of the listeners that we have today too can stop and think about it and realize that it's what comes from the inside. Beauty always comes from within. And, you know, people will remember those infectious smiles. People will remember when the warmth is in your eyes. I always say I read eyes, and I can tell when somebody has warm eyes. I can just tell, you know, like if they're a kind person. And I honestly never think about whether somebody's big or small, tall, short, whatever. I don't even think about that. I always just, it's always their eyes and their smile is the first thing that I always notice. And hopefully we can maybe help encourage some of the rest of the world to look at it that way too.
Yes, definitely.
Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show today. It's been an absolute pleasure. And if anybody wants to look up a bit about yourself or where to find you, is there a website that they can look for online?
Yes, I would say the two main ways to find me are through my website, which is foodfreedommd.com. So foodfreedommd.com, or my podcast, as you mentioned, which is Diet Culture is BS.
I love that name. Absolutely. I probably called it other names, but I can't say that on the podcast. Oh, this is great. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time. And is there still a little bit of ice happening in Texas right now, or are things settled down a little bit?
It's much better now. Hopefully spring will be here soon.
That's good. And you're probably off. You've probably got a busy day ahead. I can't imagine that it's a quiet day in any day for somebody who is a physician. I'm sure you've got a lot on your plate today.
Yeah. Thankfully, I'm off work today, but yes.
Oh, that's a good thing. Busy. And how lucky for me that on your day off in a busy world, you're able to share your time with me and with my listeners. So I just can't thank you enough. Again,
thank you so much.
Have an awesome day. And you bet. Take care. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please click like, share on your social media, and hit that subscribe button for future updates. Don't forget to join the Lindy's Audio Cafe podcast group on Facebook or visit www.lindysaudiocafe.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember when you head out that smiles come in all languages and in all colors.